Welcome back to the Clear Voice podcast, the podcast that speaks to accomplished women about how they've found their voices and are using them for change, with me, your host, Florence Bavanandan. This week, I spoke to Fiona Grayson. Fee is the founder of She Can, She Did, and has recently launched the UK's first benefits program for self-employed women. She's on a mission to bridge the gap between female founders' ambition and what current business infrastructure fails to offer them. So if you're in a corporate job, obviously you have very different responsibilities and worries from someone that's running their own business. But in addition to that, you will also get a pension. You may have other benefits such as health insurance or eye tests or even a free gym membership. And obviously, as a self-employed person, you won't be getting that. And as a self-employed woman, there are additional challenges. And Fee is really trying to bridge that gap. You'll hear more about the benefits program in the podcast, so I don't want to give you any more spoilers. But in terms of what we discussed, we really covered a lot of ground in this episode. So we started with talking about how Fee actually manages her fear of public speaking. We talk about the realities of female entrepreneurship and how to successfully moderate a discussion. We talk about conversational techniques. So Fee runs a podcast herself, and she also runs the Midweek Mingles, which are fantastic networking events for female entrepreneurs with a panel talk. And she is the moderator of that talk. And being a moderator, being a podcast host, you have to be really good at conversation and how to keep conversation going and keep it interesting. So she gives us a few of her tips. We discuss the difference between standing up for ourselves and standing up for others, and how quite often it is much easier to be able to see an injustice and stand up for someone else. But when the same injustice is happening to us, how we can so easily let it lie. We also discuss conflict resolution and how to successfully ask for things in a way that doesn't feel cringe and also gets you what you're asking for. So without further ado, let's get into it. So welcome, Fee. It is so lovely to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Florence. I'm actually so ready for this chat. I feel like I'm just ready to vent. It's Friday in a manic week. Yeah, I've made my fortress. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Very cozy. For listeners, Fee is surrounded by pillows and she looks very, very cozy. And to be honest, I'm a little bit envious.
I know. I feel like you've actually inspired me to do this more often for my podcast. I feel like this is... Yeah, it's like, who needs a recording studio when you have a whole bunch of pillows?
Absolutely, exactly. So tell us a little bit about the podcast and what you do.
So She Can, She Did is essentially the UK's first benefits program for self-employed women that we actually launched a month ago today. But I launched She Can, She Did 3 years ago. And the past 3 years have basically been groundwork leading up to that launch. So I've spent the past 3 years going around the UK, essentially interviewing female founders with the overarching aim of just finding out the honest realities of what they've had to push through to get to where they are today, to essentially cut through all of the noise on social media and the glossiness. And to be honest, a lot of misconceptions and... I'll just leave it that, but like to basically provide aspiring business owners with the honest stories of actually what people have to push through to not just launch but run and grow a business as a female founder in the UK, and also to encourage current female founders to persevere by highlighting, you know, that setbacks en route are normal, and it's never, ever, ever as glossy as it seems on social media. So that's basically the past 3 years. And then the benefits program was born out of just noticing recurring challenges crop up in every single one of those interviews. So, yeah, that's it. That was a very unsuccinct way of saying what She Can, She Did is, but there we go.
But I was so excited when the benefits program launched, because also
side note, if you didn't see the launch, it was, I think, in my experience, one of the most successful drip feeding of information launches, to the point where, and I've never done this before, but I was like, I've just got to know what is going to happen. And it was like, I think you did it like a couple of weeks before. And also just like generally been like, there are some really big plans coming. And I was like, I just want to know what the plans are. And then on the day, on the one hand, I thought of like, oh, maybe she's doing this, maybe she's doing this. But when it came out, I was like, wow, that makes so much sense. Because I think as a woman, generally the world of work is harder for us. It's not designed for us. It's a patriarchal system designed by men. It doesn't even really suit most men anymore. And as a woman, definitely not suiting us at all. And then if you like add to that being a founder or being self-employed, there are so many things counting against you. And just to have a little bit of support and the community that She Did offers in terms of the midweek mingles and the podcast, and then the added bonus of the benefits. And like my favorite is stuff like 10% off insurance. It's not just like, oh, have a bit of lipstick for free. It's things that actually matter, and that if you are in a corporate job, you would have those benefits. So I really, I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you so much. I think it's that. It's literally, for me, it's twofold, because I walked away from a corporate career and it was literally, I remember needing an eye test and just feeling it hit me probably about 4 or 5 weeks after launching She Did. Like, it's obvious that you're going to walk away from your salary. But I think it took me a few weeks, months to realize actually how much you walk away from when you walk away from that kind of proper, I'm saying in inverted commas, traditional career path. And it's like I lost, you know, my pension, my gym membership, your access to free eye care, your insurance, all of it. And that also hits you at a time when you're trying to launch a business. You've got nothing to show for yourself. Your self-esteem, your pride's on the line. Money is tighter than ever. And you lose all of those security and like the kind of core security benefits. So basically that was the inspiration behind it. But then having been in this now for 3 years and just seen how unbelievably hard female founders work, given everything we're up against as well, you know, you said about the lipstick there, but it is, to me, that side of things is of equal importance as the corporate benefits, because, you know, you could really want, I mean, I've stopped treating myself for the past 3 years. My whole lifestyle has changed, but things like lipstick or a new dress or a new bra, whatever it is,
yeah,
they go such a long way for your self-esteem. But when you can't afford them, that also adds to that whole like, oh my God, this is hard work. And so we've tried to kind of provide the rewards as those like just pick-me-ups, bit of, you know, a discount off them. But they've earned that discount because they're female founders and they're working seriously hard. So maybe it's like, you know, you don't have to feel as guilty because you know that you've earned it. And then you put that lipstick on and it might make you feel a tiny bit more confident to walk into a pitch and nail it, or walk into a networking event and feel more confident. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
there's so many different aspects to the platform. But yeah, it boils down to just, honestly, just, I mean, the strapline's resilience rewarded, and it just, yeah, there's so many different incredible women out there doing such amazing things. And I just think, yeah, they deserve more support. So,
yeah. And I think support, that's really the key word there. And I have some amazing girlfriends, but my sort of core girl group all have that quote unquote proper job. And we've had so many conversations where like, yeah, I went out and we had this like really big night out after work. We all went out and had cocktails and I spent like £150. And I'm like, oh, whoa, that is, for me, you know, I think you end up thinking about things really differently as a business owner, especially as someone who's self-employed and especially when you're starting out. And then also talking about stuff like maternity leave, and they're talking about that and thinking about the attitude in the workplace. And then I'm thinking, I actually don't know how I'm going to afford potentially to go on maternity leave and how my business is just going to stop. And that's the first challenge that I need to think about. And I think we have support in that kind of girl group way with our friends, but finding a community of like-minded entrepreneurs is really difficult. And if you don't have those people in your life, having a place like a podcast or somewhere that is supporting you, rewarding that resilience is really important, just to feel like you're not alone and you are supported.
Mm, it's so true. Like, I've interviewed women that genuinely have worked up until they're in labor and then pick the laptop up 2-3 hours after giving birth because they literally couldn't, like you said, couldn't afford to stop, or the business was in such a crucial part. And it's like, you just, I don't know. A story that comes to mind from when COVID hit was one of the most amazing women that she was one of the first people I interviewed, actually, but I've gone back and interviewed her again. She became a mum for the first time. 3 weeks later, COVID hit, 90% of her business went literally within the space of 48 hours. And she had a team of 6 to look after as well. So she's getting used to the whole host of emotions that come with being a first time mum, and then has this, what I'm sure she would agree, the hardest challenge of her business career so far, and life in general. Like, this year has been tough to deal with. And I think it's like, they're the things that, you know, this kind of girl boss mentality skims over the line.
Yes.
It's ridiculous, because it's such hard work.
It's such hard work. And it's really difficult, because on the one hand, it's great to have narratives about strong, independent women who are founding things. But then, for me personally, I feel like it really perpetuates and sets a new standard that we all have to try and achieve, like another unachievable standard. We don't need more of them. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. It's like girl boss. You have to look amazing. You have to have actually a very specific look. You have to have a very specific business. You need to be making X amount of money. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting enough running your own business, let alone having to do this in a specific way and feeling inevitably like you're failing constantly.
Mm, absolutely. You've said it basically. That's exactly it. There's this like really strange, like growing momentum online right now that is just encouraging perfection straight away, or giving this impression that you launch something and there is overnight success. And it's absolutely not true. And anyone that says otherwise, I just feel like it preys on vulnerability, but it's, they're the kind of clickbait things when you're feeling vulnerable, as so many of us are this year. That's clickbait that works. People want, you know, we're in a recession. People want their businesses to be doing better. They, you know, they want those quick wins, but that works. And then the people kind of feeding that gain, when actually then, I don't know, that you realize that suddenly it's not quite as simple as that. And it's just a perpetual cycle. So yeah, I could rant all day, Florence. I'm trying to be good. But I just think that the moral of the story is, you know, to be whatever, you know, success looks like. My experience over the past 3 years only confirms that every single woman that I admire that worked, they're working their socks off, and they've had to push through so many challenges behind the scenes, and they persevere and they keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of challenges, because I know that you know, She Can, She Did is very much fronted by you in terms of the podcast and also the Midweek Mingles, which, by the way, guys, if you have not been to one, just when they start again, get on it, go. I'm still using some things from the last goodie bag. Discovered a new favorite gin.
Hey, which one?
Oh, the blue Hendrix. No, not the Hendrix one. The blue Warner's.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like cardamom.
Yeah, no, the Warner's gin is good. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. They're such an amazing team. Thank you.
Yeah. And so my question is, you know, was it always natural for you to be front and center and to be presenting in such a central way?
I love this question, because I mean, this whole podcast is about your voice, right? And finding your voice and all of that kind of thing. And I think, you know, it's really, really interesting. I love that side of things, but it 100% hasn't come naturally to me. And it's a really weird one, because I've done public speaking through school, through university, and in my old job as well, we had to present. And, you know, I remember going back even in my teens, and in fact, I'm going to go right back to being about 12 in year 8, I remember seeing the head girl speak in an assembly and thinking to myself, I really want to be her one day. And knowing that to get there, I had to, it meant I had to work hard basically and do different things throughout school. So I buckled down and I did those things. And then I remember to be head girl at our school, there was loads of different things that we had to go through. So, and one of them was naturally to present to the year and get the year's vote as well. And I remember just being like, in my head, I am genuinely petrified. But I know that to get head girl, I have to do that speech. And I remember just acknowledging it in that speech that it was never going to be my strong point, but you did it anyway. And then I remember everyone used to tell me, and then obviously being head girl, you had to do speeches at open evenings and with the governors and all of that kind of thing. And everyone would always say like, oh, it gets better in time for you. You know, practice makes perfect, all of this kind of thing. And I would always, always be fine when I was doing the speech, but the build up to it, I would just freak myself out. And it never, ever went away. And then I remember when I launched She Can, She Did, I always knew I wanted to bring the events back into it. And part of that would obviously mean hosting them. And I just like had a word with myself. And it was like a case of, this is your business. You're supposed to enjoy this. You're not supposed to be terrified by it. And so I just decided to go and see a hypnotherapist. And I was so skeptical, like honest to God. I remember seeing her and just, it was a friend of my mum's. And I remember just saying, you know, like, I really don't think this is going to work. I want it to so badly, but I'm just, you know, when people say, I'd basically kind of given up hope. I'd kind of just accepted that I wouldn't, I'd always not enjoy speaking. And in any case, whatever she did, it was a BWRT brain something therapy. Oh God, I should probably know. And she basically took me back to a memory when I was in year 8 and kind of worked me really like up, where I remember being so scared and my hands were shaking with my note cards and all of this. And she asked me like, how do you want to feel when you're public speaking? And I just said, I want to feel calm and I want to feel like in control and I can do this. I just wanted to know I could do this. And she basically for about an hour and a half did all this stuff to just kept going over and basically rewiring the brain message. So before, I used to think public speaking and I'd be like, I'm terrified, I'm rubbish at it, blah, blah, blah. That's what my brain would just tell me. Whereas now it's so strange. It's like I say, think public speaking, and I automatically, before I even try and doubt myself, my brain's telling me I'm calm and I've got it.
Wow. And so,
yeah, it's honestly, it was so unbelievable. And I'm always so skeptical about things like that. And anyway, like I still opened the mingles. I remember I had a G&T in my hand and my voice was all dry. And I remember just taking the mic out of myself, had a sip and off I went, and the audience laughed and we were all good. And from then on, don't get me wrong, every single mingle, I always get nervous just beforehand, but I just know that I can just do it. And then the minute, it's really interesting, the minute it turns to the panel and I'm moderating, I literally love it. It's always my opening remarks when it's just on me that I get nervous. It's so strange, yeah. Florence.
Well, the pressure's on, isn't it? And it's, yeah, in you're opening everything and no one knows what to expect and you don't quite know how it's going to go. And it's interesting what you say about nerves and still feeling nervous. And a lot of people, when they come to me, they're like, oh, I feel so nervous before I speak. And I have to break the news that it's never going to go away. And a lot of the time, as you say, it's about kind of sitting with it and knowing that there's always, you get a little bit in there and then it's going to be fine.
Mm, absolutely.
And I love what you say as well about taking the mic out of yourself. We feel like when we're on stage, we have to be perfect, but it's not the case. And actually showing some humility, making a joke, if you drop something, everyone's seen it, so you may as well say something.
Honestly, that, I think that's it. And it's just the minute you take that pressure off, it's, yeah, it just goes such a long way. I wish I could tell everyone that, because there is nothing worse than going to a presentation and it being so structured and rigid and just, no.
Exactly. Because it's just, it's not talking to you. You're not having a conversation. You want to, when someone's doing a speech, you want to feel like you're the only person they're talking to.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. And now look, you mentioned moderating and interestingly, you already draw the conclusion that you feel very different in those two worlds, because it is a really different skill. And often some people, you know, I definitely find it harder because you're having to think about what they're saying, maybe find a remark, maybe link it to another person on the panel. So how do you deal with that?
If I'm being honest, that bit has just felt, not easy is the wrong word, but just, I guess, second nature. Like, I've always been able to, like, small talk's my thing. Like, put me in a room and I will talk to anyone and I just ramble away. And don't get me wrong, you're never going to get on with everyone, but I will be able to hold a conversation with pretty much anyone, I think. And I think when it comes to the mingles and just, I know what you mean, like, you've always kind of got to try and find a link and all of that kind of thing. But I think, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just try and have a ramble. And obviously there's certain themes that crop up. But in general, so far, I think it helps that I really try and think about the panel as well and like how the stories will relate and, you know, get some contrast in there and all of that kind of thing. But in general, I try not to structure it too much. The panel don't get sets of questions, they kind of get a brief overview and we just have a ramble and go with that.
Interesting. So you have that kind of general overview of the sort of narrative you want it to take. So it's, you have a blueprint maybe, and then you just let the house take its shape.
Yeah, definitely. Because it goes back to that, I think the minute you try and structure it too much or plan too much, we've all been there, we've all been at events and things do go off on tangents. And I think that when it's too rigid, you almost lose that kind of, sometimes you can go down a rabbit warren, but it's a really, really good one. And don't get me wrong, we all know when someone's going off on a tangent, and it's just like, hey, rein it back, love. In general, I just think they're the kind of chats where you just get the honest answers. I think it's interesting as well, because sometimes with the podcast, people ask for like a set kind of questions, but I sometimes think that there's like a spontaneity when you just have like themes that you're going to cover, you don't get to plan your answers too much, and then you can just have a proper good natter. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's really interesting because everyone has their own style for how they do it, and also their own boundaries in which they feel comfortable and can perform. I'm very similar to you in that I like to know where it's going to go. And I like to have a kind of backup, an idea of if nothing happened, well, what would I do? But then equally, you know, I think being a naturally curious person really helps. And when we get stuck in that situation of, oh, I don't know what to say, or as you say, you're stuck in a room with someone, I love to play a game of like, oh, how much can I find out about them? You know, and just allowing, like letting the panic calm down and just allowing your natural curiosity to bubble up. And as you say, just have a really good natter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like as well, part of the parcel with She Did is like really unpicking all of the nitty-gritty bits. So people often say in an interview, oh God, you know, like the first couple of years were so tough. And then this happened and off we went. And it's a case of no, stop there. Let's unpick that. And why? And why were they hard? And what actually did that look like? And what did that feel like? And just not letting those kind of sweeping statements pass, because actually there's stories in all of those bits. I always think why is always a good, it's a fail safe. If anyone says anything and you're like, shit, what do I say next? Why?
Oh my God, brilliant. And also really owning it rather than being like, why?
Yeah. Yeah, say it confidently, you're good.
Exactly. And so look, you are a confident person and you've definitely found your voice, but was there a time where you really didn't have a voice?
It's really interesting because I think that I'm a really confident person. I think that it's really that kind of perception, like genuinely I find quite intriguing, because I think my confidence comes from just generally knowing, like understanding who I am, what I stand for. And like, there's a kind of just a, you just sound like a bit of a dick sometimes when you say this, don't you? But it's sort of, I really trust my gut instinct and I just sort of trust my values and who they are. And that kind of feeds through. So if I see something or hear something that I quite naturally know if I align with it or not. And I think that kind of I think that steers that confidence, but I don't ever kind of put myself, I don't know, it's so hard. I'm not answering this properly at all. But I'm just trying to think, like, if I ever, I think I've always felt like that. And I really mean that, but I haven't always followed it, if that makes sense. I've known what I stand for. In fact, I remember someone once telling me when I was about 16, my greatest strength is I've got a really strong moral compass. I know what's right and what's wrong. And I would stand up for, you know, if there was in school, for instance, if there was something that I didn't agree with, if someone was being bullied or something, but it was like a popular crowd doing it, I'd be the first to say, like, stand up for that person. But then when it's on me, hang on, I know where I'm going now. When it's me being confronted, and when I was younger, actually, injustice, when it kind of came focused on me, I wasn't very good at standing up for myself then. And I'm just trying to think, I think that actually has come with, as I've got older and kind of pushed myself out of my comfort zone in different ways, you learn to, I don't know, there's like, I don't know if that's like a cliched thing that kind of comes with growing up, but I definitely feel like I've always been confident standing up for, and using my voice when it's benefiting other people. But then I don't necessarily think that I've always been good at doing it for myself. And actually, even now, I've kind of said, do I do it for myself? Now there's some things I still let lie.
Why do you think that is?
Oh gosh, I really don't know. I think there's still that kind of, there's a like a people pleasing, or maybe is it people pleasing or just, oh God, this is hard, Florence. I'm really trying to think. There's things where, I'll tell you what it is. There's things, in fact, we're working on some campaigns at the moment where we're going to start standing up for things that we've just observed, to really try and encourage women. It's quite funny to really go back and just listen to themselves and trust themselves and stop looking on other people to answer the things we already know, basically. You know, sometimes you need to read a book just to feel like you've read the book so that you can, and the book tells you exactly what you know. And I think, oh God, my brain is not functioning. I can't answer this properly. This is my issue. There's certain things where it's like, when it's of importance. Oh Christ, I'm going off on a tangent. There's not really an answer in there, is there?
No, there is. And I'm also, it's hard because I know exactly how you feel. And I had a really simple, this exact scenario is what actually led me to set up Clear Voice. Because I could always stand up.
You can see how unclear mine is.
But it's so hard to unpick, because I really empathize, because I had exactly the same thing. Because I was like, I don't understand. I'm such a confident, outspoken person. If there's ever any injustice, I will be the first person to be there. I will have a debate with anyone. And I will really stand up for people. But when it came to me, I would just be like, just kind of let it wash over me. And it really came to a head when we were, you know, running the business, the artist development business, and there'd be these decisions and I'd feel really strongly about them. And it's that gut feeling. And I would feel it in my gut and I would know that it's the wrong decision to be making, but I'd kind of convince myself, oh no, no, they're probably right. They're probably right. And then nope, lo and behold, it was wrong. And we should have gone with my gut before. And then I think when that happens, it doesn't mean that you go with your gut again in the future. I don't know why. logically it should, because you're like, oh, well, this went wrong last time when I didn't listen to my gut, so now I should, but it doesn't happen. And I think you're so right. People pleasing. I was talking to Mother Hustler a couple of days ago about, I'm not sure where this is going to fall in the podcast, but if you haven't listened to that episode yet and it's out, go and listen to it. If it's not out, then wait for it. It's going to be a good one.
It's coming.
Yeah, exactly. So organized. Yeah, we're talking about being the good girl. And the good girl is someone who would definitely stand up for others, but probably wouldn't speak out for themselves and wouldn't want to make a fuss or be that person.
Do you know what? This is it. I think one of my biggest things with anyone that reaches out or DMs or anything is a being polite. And I genuinely feel like building business relationships, it goes really back to the basics of please and thank yous and remembering to check in with people along the way, et cetera, et cetera. And I think because of that, I have this reputation of being nice. And I actually feel like, and I'm proud of the fact I've always, it's interesting, it's been held against me as well, because when you say you're pleased and teased, people think, you know, daddy's paid for the business kind of thing, and it couldn't be further from the truth. But that's another whole different tangent I could go off on. But the nice thing, I think, has sometimes, I think people have boxed She Can, She Did into a sort of, you know, it tells the honest truth, and, you know, it's so nice and et cetera, et cetera. When there's actually a lot of, like we were saying earlier, you know, the kind of bold, brashy, clickbait accounts that are like, I suppose, like the sexy ones. And I've never been cool in my life. And I think it's really interesting where we kind of observe these things and, you know, when people align with certain stuff and there's this underlying gut feeling that I've had for, you know, probably for about 18 months, but building so much recently, where it's a case of some of this isn't right. Like, it's not fair to be saying these statements, and it's misleading people down certain routes. And it's actually, I think, yeah, when I think about it, I've been really nervous to just own the fact and stand up for the fact that we need to do something about that and just say, hang on a second, that's not as easy as it's looking. And it's 100%, I've always said it's not as glamorous as that, but there's actually certain things where you get worried about then creating a fuss and all of that kind of thing. But actually now we're working on some campaigns in the background that really just stand up for that. And yeah, I think it's kind of come to a breaking point. I think 2020, all of this, the feeling, like we were saying earlier, there's so much uncertainty and angst and stuff going on that, yeah, something needs to be said. And I think that now is kind of, I've sort of reached a point now personally where I'm just like, right, enough is enough. Let's stand up against this. But it's definitely been a journey. And I'm so sorry for how incoherent that took to get to that answer, but there we go.
But you know, also, like, thank you for being incoherent, because that's the reality, isn't it? We're not always articulate, and you know, as you're saying, it's taken 18 months for you to get to this point with the campaigns, and sometimes it takes a little bit of ramble to work out what you actually want to say.
And, oh my God, Florence, I'm the queen of rambling. Like, yeah. I think that's something I've actually struggled with. Is you kind of hear people, I'm so much better when I observe things and I take a lot in, but I'm so much better at communicating, writing things down. Always like the big thinking stuff and the you know, the deep emotion stuff, I process that so much better with words, pen on paper, or, you know, fingers on laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's really interesting because that's a kind of insecurity that I've had, where trying to actually vocalize, and I have it, I've had this conversation with my partner, with my family, like friends growing up, trying to articulate how I feel about certain topics has always been a struggle. But give me a pen and paper and I'll tell you how I feel. It's really odd. And it's quite funny, because I think the nice thing with the niceness which She Can, She Did, and the personality and getting to know me, especially in the early days, not so much now because I've kind of drawn back a bit, but I used to keep diaries from the age of 12 to 18 and literally write like a page, page and a half, 2 pages. And God, if I went on a date with a boy or something, there'd be like a whole chapter dedicated to just, you know, my first kiss or whatever. And so I'm so used to writing things down and rambling and really just like, and I used to write posts in the same way pretty much when I started She Can, She Did. And I feel so much more confident about really kind of saying how I feel through words than I do out loud. Really strange.
Cool, does you it got help you?
Out of me. There you go.
Well, I know. I'm like, yeah, gold. Keep it coming. Does it ever help you to write it? Do you ever write it down if you know that you're going to have to speak? Is that part of your process?
100%. Opening remarks for the mingles. I always, always have kind of themes that I want to cover. 100%. Like I would panic so much if I had to speak for 10 minutes in front of an audience of 100 and just kind of ramble. No, you wouldn't get. I mean, do you know what? I'm sure I say this. I am absolutely sure I would find something in it and make it work. But my mindset going into it, I would be an absolute nervous wreck. So as long as I've prepped and I know ish what I'm going to say, I'm fine. And it's the same if I'm speaking on a panel or anything. Like I always kind of just have a little think about, obviously knowing what the panel will be or whatever. I'll always have a think about the kind of ish things, points I want to get across, and then the rest will just, I'll ramble with it, but there's always kind of, so that this doesn't happen basically.
I love this has been great. And yeah, with being a good girl and social media, I think the thing that really worries me about it, and I'm so excited that you're going to put written stuff out in campaigns, because when it's just two people talking you can be far more outspoken, but when it's going to, there's going to be a record of it and something that people can react to immediately, I think it's very anxiety inducing and it makes you feel like you don't want to be too much on either side of the argument. And I've found myself doing that and I ended up with just really beige content. And it's that classic thing of, if you're not alienating one set of people, you're also not pleasing anyone, but you're not connecting with anyone. And I found it so emancipating when I have something, I'm like, ooh, a bit contentious. Ooh, should I? And then I'm like, yeah, I will. And it's so freeing to do that. It is also scary and you do also get more flack for it, but you do speak to more people. And ultimately that is what we're here for, isn't it? It's to really get to those people who need the message.
Yeah, 100%. I think that bit's never, if I'm being completely honest from the outset, like it was always back in the early days, it was teens, 20s and 30s. And straight away there were people saying ageist, et cetera, et cetera. But I felt really, really strongly about the fact that in 2017, when I launched, you were only ever heard of like the Jo Malones, who are amazing, but once they've made it, and there was very little for younger women. And that's changed now. But I think there's no harm in standing for something, and you are allowed to change your opinion. And that is something that I will, you know, I would encourage all of us to share as much as possible. And there's, we've even had it, you know, this year with obviously following Black Lives Matter and then, well, LGBTQ plus rights, and what it means to be a company that's supposed to be supporting, you know, female founders and what female means, and breaking that down and just really holding our hands up and just saying there's never going to be like one final iteration of She Can, She Did. We're constantly learning. And we're encouraging people to help us with that process. But like just holding our hands up and just saying, you know, we're trying, and that's the best you can do, right? And if you upset, it's actually really, really funny. My only ever troll, my only ever big one was during Black Lives Matter, and someone that hadn't been following She Can, She Did, found it through a hashtag and went in on me, was sending me the most vile DMs, like horrendous. And it's really interesting. She was kind of saying all this stuff in the comments and tagging people in it. And I literally just replied and I said, because some of the stuff she was saying was completely incorrect, like factually, but then everyone's entitled to their own opinion around that. So I counter-argued the facts, but the rest of it, I just said, like, let's jump on a Zoom call and just speak. Like, more than happy to discuss this, et cetera, et cetera. And she came back and she said, I would be more than happy to speak to you face-to-face, via, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we got the Zoom call in the diary. And I really built myself up for that conversation. I remember thinking, like, right, okay, this is going to be intense. So I just kind of set aside an hour beforehand and really just thought about how I'm going to handle it, basically. And she never showed up. And I remember messaging her just saying, I'm on the Zoom call. Like, and she sent me back a voice note and just saying, Fiona, I'm so sorry. I'm really, really sorry. So sorry to mess you around. And the tone completely changed. And I just thought, like, so interesting that the minute you have that human face-to-face, say it to my face, let's talk, how different the tone of voice and everything changes. And it's just all of that kind of fear, because there is so much anxiety for standing up for something online and speaking the truth or whatever. And I just think that we need to all remember, if you have a problem or you want to challenge something, would you be able to say that to the person's face? Because I am wholly confident that so much of the trolling and the call out and the cancel culture would be worded so much, well, just a lot differently if it was all done in person.
Yeah, or it wouldn't be there.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of that is because when you're in written communication, the only trajectory is onwards and upwards, and it gets more and more and more and more intense. Whereas when you can have a conversation, then you have the capacity to just understand, and there is a natural rise and fall and rise and fall.
And body language.
Yeah.
And eye contact and everything.
Yeah.
It's just completely missing. And that's why I think, again, some of the campaigns that we're working on, again, there's some stuff that combats that, and we're working with Glitch, who are committed to ending online abuse, the charity. We dedicate 10% to them. And just about, like, digital self-care and navigating cancel culture and trolling and all of that kind of thing, because people are scared to use their voice for that very reason. And then what we're doing is muting ourselves. And then what kind of life is that? Do you know what I mean? So, I have such a love-hate relationship with social media. And I just think that I say it all the time to my partner, if collectively across the board we all had to throw our phones away, I would be all for it. But what I don't like the idea of if it was just me throwing my phone away and everyone else still there. It's really strange.
But no, I totally get that. Yeah, you don't want to be the only one that's not invited to the party and everyone can talk about you. Yeah,
I think it's just such simpler times. Like, the history geek in me just thinks, like, growing up without phones and all of that, I would be absolutely for it. And just going back to business, you know, like creating little flyers and going and knocking on doors and all of that, I'm so game for that kind of business.
Yeah, totally. We're doing a lot of community work where I live at the moment, and we're going door knocking this weekend, and I'm so excited because obviously all the word spreading that I do generally in my business is online, and you're like, have people seen it? Did they like it? Did they just scroll on? Were they like, that's crap? And I'm so excited to knock on people's doors and be like, this is a thing that we're doing, and just see their faces and be able to have a conversation that doesn't rely on them liking something and potentially even messaging me, but just being able to have a proper conversation.
Absolutely.
But a lot of the time, in order to get into people's lives, and I know this is something you've really experienced when setting up the benefits program, we have to be sending emails, and that's often the first point of contact we have. So how was it for you, firstly, writing those emails? Is there a kind of template you follow? Do you have general rules about what you put in there? And secondly, how do you feel about asking for stuff?
So that in answer to the first question, there's definitely a template, and it's personalize each one. I introduce myself and very quickly make sure that whoever I'm speaking to understands the demographic and is in as much detail and why that relates to why I'm asking. And then I also make it very clear what's in return for them. because it's really interesting. I remember interviewing an amazing woman called Jenna Sue, who's the founder of a company called Shrine. And it was at the Manchester Mingle. And she was basically saying that, you know, when she set up Shrine, she reached out to some of the massive high street brands and basically immediately straight away said what the way they she sees the collaboration going and what Shrine can offer them and why it's different. And they said yes straight away, naturally, because it was so good. But her pet hate is when people reach out to Shrine saying, "I'd love to collaborate." And it's so interesting because it happens with Shekhan. She did. "I'd love to collaborate. I'd love to collaborate in some way, in some way." And it's kind of like, how? Like, say how? What does that look like? And break it down. And why should I be interested in that? And that's how that it's always kind of stuck with me. And just make it really, really clear to any brand that I'm reaching out what they get in return. And when it comes to asking for stuff, not at all, because it's pitching it in such a way where they're ultimately they're getting in front of an audience of women aged between 18 to 45. At the Mingles, it's predominantly 25 to 35. And so for beauty brands, what's not to love, right? And it's kind of what we can do in return and have fun with that. And so it's not really thinking, people must make the mistake when they're kind of pitching goodie bags and stuff is just asking for stuff. And it's like, why should the brand give you stuff for free? But it's just thinking about, how can I help you and how can you help me and making it mutually beneficial. And also, oh my gosh, saying please. And it's really interesting. Again, like, I don't want to sound like my dad, but I feel like I fear that I'm turning into him. But honestly, like, please and thank you just go such a long way. And I just think that, I think I'm old before my time, but like, it just really bothers me when, especially in DMs, I don't know what it is, but I just think that there's like a kind of sense of entitlement, nowadays where you kind of expect people to just respond and answer your questions and straight away, and if they haven't within an hour then follow up, and I just think, like, no, just if you don't say please and thank you, don't get me wrong, I've answered, and silly, it goes back to that nice thing, I think, and just not really standing up for myself, because it really, rudeness really bothers me, and I find myself responding through gritted teeth. But then it's so interesting when someone's sent a really lovely message, I'm just instantly like, oh, this is what it's all for. And it's really, it's just an observation, I think.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I've had so many messages saying, "I love your podcast, I'd love to come on as a guest," and that's it. I'm like, oh, you haven't listened to the podcast. You've just seen the word podcast on my Instagram. You have no idea. But equally, you know, when you get something that's really engaged and they say something really personal and they say what they can bring to it, you're like, wow, immediately they've invested time in you. And so you feel like that reciprocal investment is just something you're going to give.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think politeness really goes a long way. So in terms of really feeling like you've had your voice heard, was there a moment for you that was a real sort of victory of, oh, I've done it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I remember when, so Swarovski reached out to me last April, May, asking me to host an event for them. And it was with Nadia Hussein, who won the Bake Off, and Giovanna Fletcher, and their head, one of the heads at Swarovski.
Well, what a great hangout. Like, I mean, if you're going to do a good evening, they'd be right on my list.
And I remember just thinking, like, it's so interesting that I wish I could go back and tell 17-year-old me that used to absolutely dread public speaking, that one day not only would I host my own events, but being asked for a big brand to host an event and interview women that I genuinely have grown up with and admired. And I remember I was standing in the loos before hosting that. And have you seen Amy Cuddy's TED talk on Superwoman pose?
Yes, love it.
Literally, I was doing that, Florence. I was standing in the loo and I was just trying to calm myself down. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror and standing with my hands on my hips and just trying to just be like, I can do this, like, and just trying to get myself in that mindset. But I remember walking away from that event and just thinking like, I'm really proud of myself, because I just would never, ever, ever have thought. I always used to dream it. I always used to think, God, I'd love to do that. But I'd always be like, yeah, but public speaking, like, you just won't. And I know that's not really related to the actual mingles and everything, but I think it was just that external thing. Like, I always push through. I won't let my like personal fears hold me back. But I think it was someone else kind of thinking I'd be good enough to do it for them. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, totally.
Do something for you and like push through and know that you'll do it. But it was just that additional pressure of it being someone else's event. And yeah, I was just really proud of that.
I love it. I love it. So often it's those things that we told ourselves that we could never do. When we achieve them, that's the real benchmark. There's not as much challenge, of course, in doing something that you're always good at. Or that you always knew that you could do, or it was never a challenge. But when it's the thing for you that you were like, oh, I'd like to do this. Oh no, but I have this thing that really holds me back. That was the real moment of success for you, that you did it and you nailed it. And it, yeah. And that outside endorsement as well. I think you're totally right. It is really important that you have that recognition, and it's in a space that you respect and that you probably, forgive me if I'm reading into you, that you probably would have looked at someone doing a similar event a couple of years before and thought, oh, I'd really like to do that. I'd like to be that person. And then becoming that person is so cool.
Yeah, no, I was really, yeah, exactly that. You've read me like a book.
Yes, I've done my research. So finally, the question I always ask is, who are the women that inspire you? And I feel like you've got loads to choose from.
Yeah, there's an amazing woman called Emily Summers, who is the founder of a company called Bravery Co. And she she's in her early 30s and has been diagnosed with cancer 3 times now and fought it each time. And Bravery Co. is, while she's been having chemo and radiotherapy and everything, running this company that basically provides cancer, people with cancer, basically, with scarves that are amazing prints and just really like inject fun. And she is incredible. Like, she's currently the face of the platform, just because she just, to me, stands for absolutely everything that I, you know, the whole resilience thing. Like, you can't get more resilient than that. But then there's also, like, last night I was interviewing an amazing woman called Rebecca Crawforth, who is the founder of Navy Pro Tools. And Navy is a company that basically has completely redefined the beauty industry by providing creating like cuticle cutters, files, all of that in a sustainable way, because they used to be like single use or rust and all of this. And in any case, her story, oh my God, I was just on cloud nine last night. Like, she was a single mum. She dropped out of school at 13. She was a single mum by 21, got a grant for a business, started a salon when her son was 12 months old, had a team of 40 by late 20s, then suddenly lost all feeling in her arms and legs, went to the doctors, went for an MRI scan, realised that her brain had sagged onto her spinal cord. Ooh. And had to go and had brain surgery. And then whilst recovering from brain surgery, she had another child at this point, decided to launch Navy. And within 2 years, it's now a global company, 7 figures. It's based up in Yorkshire, supports loads of local Yorkshire makers. And you just think like, oh my God, put all of our challenges in perspective and just appreciate what everyone's going through. And it's just like, honestly, there's so many women I could say, Florence. Like,
I knew you would be, yeah, because your podcast, you see people every day.
Yeah, that's why I just love what I do, because, you know, with She Can, She Did from day one, I've really tried to share my own story launching this so that there's a real-time account of actually what goes on behind the scenes to get something off the ground. And I think sometimes it people forget that I'm a business owner, like She Can, She Did is my business, and it comes with all of these challenges. So when I speak to women like Rebecca last night, that's like therapy for me. Just hearing the fact that they've pushed through that, like, and it just kind of gives you that kick up the bum to be like, oh my God, get a grip, like, let's keep going. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, yeah, there's so many women.
Oh, Fee, thank you so much. And I'm sure this episode, you'll be one of those women that people mention as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. It has been a joy to speak to you today.
I've really enjoyed it, Florence. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I've honestly just sat through therapy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Clear Voice podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Don't forget you can write in with any questions, hello@clearvoiceofficial.com, and follow me on Instagram @clearvoiceofficial. Next week, I'll be speaking to Ravadeep Kaur, who is a presence-based coach and anti-racism consultant and educator. Wow, that's right. She is speaking to white people about race, and she's doing it in a different way. She's using mindfulness, and that is probably not a word that you would ever think would come in the same space as racism and racism education. So, I'll see you next week when you can find out more.